our Seahawks insider from the News Tribune. You can follow him at GBell Seattle on Twitter. Get the latest Seahawk information, and there's a lot of it to discuss today. That's why we're going to have him on twice, now and then again at 8 o'clock for the 12th man roundtable. Hi, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. It's been kind of a head-scratching week for you professionally, hasn't it, trying to figure out this football team?
It's funny you said that. I just scratched my head when you did that. Literally scratched my head. I did. It has. It's a little par for this course the last 5 years with this team. But, yeah, you thought when Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett left that it might be a little more normal. But, no, it has been abnormal for the first 2 weeks of the season.
Pete suggested that the offensive line and its pass protection of Russell's not as bad as what the statistics claim. That makes a lot of Seahawks fans laugh or chuckle. What about you? Do you think there's any merit to what he's saying?
I do. What he means is, he didn't want to come out and say it, but what he means is it's Russell Wilson's fault too. And Wilson holding the ball, Wilson taking losses when it's 3rd and 10 and 3rd and 14 instead of just getting rid of it. I suspect this, that Wilson doesn't want to just chuck the ball. This is a complete supposition and guess on my part. But Wilson just doesn't want to chuck the ball because of statistics. He wants to keep his completion percentage high when it becomes contract time. And I think he's got some of that, perhaps as his agent, but some of that in the back of his mind, that he wants to keep his numbers high and he doesn't want a throwing percentage in the 50s, which actually he has had in the past 10 games or so. And that's part of it. Part of it is his aversion to getting rid of the ball and potentially getting into turnover situations, which we saw in Chicago killed their comeback. But most of all, he doesn't have a big pocket. He does sometimes have time. Jermaine Fetti brought up an interesting point yesterday. He said, you know what we need to get better at is giving him a bigger pocket so he has room to throw. There are times that he's pressured, not to the point he's getting hit, but that he doesn't have any escape routes, and he really doesn't have room to step up and throw. So part of the Seahawks' pass protection issue is to form a more solid pocket, a bigger space for Wilson to either step into or get outside and run with that he has in so many years. So even when the sack numbers are as bad as they are, 12 leading the NFL, it's not only the sacks, but it's the room he has to throw when he's not getting hit. So, I mean, yeah, we're getting into nuances, but there's a shared blame, I guess, is the bottom line for the 12 sacks. I've counted 5 of the 12. I think Russell Wilson was at fault. He admitted to 3 at Denver in the opener, and I counted at least twice in Chicago. He held onto the ball longer than an NFL quarterback should.
Do you think, that there's any part of the receivers not getting any separation, not getting open? Is that part of why he's holding on to the ball, or is it he's not getting time to get to his next read?
No, there's some of that. There's definitely some of the receivers not getting open. There is a lot of the fact that for 6.5 of the 8 quarters of this season, Doug Baldwin has not been out there. Mm-hmm. And there are people kind of forget that. But when Wilson has needed a play in the last 6 years, be it on third down, be it when he's under pressure, think about the Arizona double pirouette 55-yard gain last year. When he absolutely needs to throw to somebody because he's got nothing else, he throws to Baldwin. And Baldwin gets open. He shakes guys at the line. He's one of the best in the NFL in the slot at getting away from press coverage right off the snap with head fakes and moves inside and hands. He's exquisite at that, and he gets open when people shouldn't get open, when coverage is tight, and he hasn't been there because of a knee injury. He's got two bad knees, one that he said is not going to be 100% all year, the left one that he missed all preseason for, and the right one, which he just injured and has an MCL sprain, that he sounds like he's not coming back this week either, from what Carroll said yesterday. That's a huge deal, because behind him you have Tyler Lockett, who's never proven himself in the NFL as a consistent receiver, been a Pro Bowl punt returner, but still has struggled to assert himself as a wide receiver. Brandon Marshall, 34 years old, coming off 2 surgeries, who is great physically but not separating, and in the last 3 or 4 years has not separated from defensive backs. And then a bunch of Jerron Browns and David Moore, Keenan Reynolds. I mean... They sure miss Paul Richardson and Jermaine Kearse, which they weren't going to re-sign Paul Richardson, but that Jermaine Kearse trade, everyone wanted Jermaine Kearse, including someone on your show, wanted Jermaine Kearse out of town yesterday.
More than
and
one.
Now that he's out of town, they could sure use him.
Greg Bell is our guest, brought to you by the Michaels Automotive Group, a family-owned and operated dealership that places customer satisfaction as its highest priority. They feature three of America's most popular automotive brands, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Subaru, all located at the same location just off I-90 and Eastgate. Well, if the offense is struggling, I got to believe an offense without Justin Britt isn't a good idea. What's going on with the center?
Bruised shoulder, according to Pete Carroll. Day-to-day, the coach said. They are lining up contingency plans, and one of them's hurt. Ethan Posick was the first man that Carroll mentioned as an option at center because he played it at LSU for most of his time there. He's the starting left guard, and now he's in a walking boot. He missed practice along with Britt yesterday with an ankle injury, so that would be Joey Hunt if Posick can't play. I think the Seahawks prefer that Posick be the center. DJ Fluker came back to practice yesterday for the first time in 3 weeks from the hamstring injury, so he looks like he's on track to start at right guard, and then they could push J.R. Sweezy to left guard and have Posick play center, but Posick's in a walking boot right now. So that's a big loss if the mastermind, the brains of the protection calls and the line calls before the snap, Justin Britt, the second-best lineman, can't play. 40% of the starting offensive line was not practicing yesterday. That's after Fluker came back for the first time in 3 weeks.
Dallas,
everything's great, by the way.
Everything sounds wonderful, no doubt. Speaking of injuries, any chance Bobby Wagner gets back on the field against the Cowboys?
Yes, it's going to happen. Pete Carroll said they're expecting him to play. He practiced fully yesterday. That's going to help, not just because he's Bobby Wagner, an all-pro, but Dak Prescott is running more for the Cowboys. He ran seven times last week for a career-high 45 yards against the Giants. Jerry Jones came out this week on his radio show, the owner and the Cowboys, and said, we want Prescott to run more, which means Prescott's going to run more because Jerry Jones gets everything he wants down there. And Bobby Wagner would be the spy for the quarterback getting outside. And Bobby Wagner is the best, I think, in the league at doing that. Among all the other things he does, gets him on the right place before the snap, communicates. He is great. He's so fast yet so strong. He is great at getting through the wash and getting outside and spying mobile quarterbacks. He's done it with Cam Newton for years and the many times they've played the Panthers. It will be a huge advantage for the Seahawks if Dak Prescott has to run against Bobby Wagner rather than Austin Calitro.
Did you ever see the Tasteless movie Stuck on You, starring Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear? Greg,
have not. I try to avoid Greg Kinnear movies, but no, yeah. I haven't.
It's about Siamese twins. It's one of those Farley comedies, and then they do it everything together, and they're best friends, obviously. And then they separate them, and then they just don't feel the same. Like life just doesn't feel as pleasurable to them in any way, shape, or form. I'm kind of getting that from Wagner. I think that Wagner, without K.J. Wright being stuck to him, he didn't play as well as we want to see him play in week one. And then in week number two, I think his groin injury happened because he misses K.J. Wright. So those two, when are they going to be on the field together again? Please, let's stick them back together.
Well, I'm not going to comment on two men and groin injuries, but it doesn't sound like K.J. Wright is going to be back this week. He didn't get back to practice yesterday. It's the biggest practice preparation day of the week, and Carroll didn't really give a timetable on when Wright might be back, so I expect he will miss the game against Dallas, which means Michael Kendricks will play because the Seahawks got word, according to Carroll, from the league that they will not determine his appeal of his suspension nor suspend him before the game. So they will have Kendricks, who played well in Ken Norton's estimation, especially because he only had two practices last week before that game.
All right, we'll get into all these other topics at 8 o'clock today when you show up for the roundtable.
Yeah, we have a few things to talk about.
Let's do it. All right. Greg Bell, thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, a little bit.
All right, our Seahawks insider, Greg Bell, a little Seahawks at 7 for you, and then we will expand on all of that at 8 o'clock with Greg and with Hugh and with Curtis Crabtree as we do our 12th man roundtable every Thursday at 8 o'clock. Coming up next, another conversation with our baseball guy. Bill Krueger's going to join us. I'll ask him about D. Gordon and see if he's as angry about the entire situation as I am.
Graduated from McMinnville, Oregon High School. Now many guys from Middle High in the big leagues.
Baseball with Bill, brought to you by VenueKings.com. Hawks tickets, home or away, baseball tickets, concerts, they've got them all. For all your ticket needs, go with a trusted source in Seattle, VenueKings.com.
Here on this lovely Thursday here in Seattle. Bucky Jacobson here, former Mariner. My name is Chuck Powell, not a former Mariner. Bill Krueger is on the line right now to talk a little baseball. Just a couple weeks, actually, what, 10 games left in the regular season? And for the Mariners, looking more and more like it's inevitable. There will not be a postseason. Nevertheless, always cool things to talk about in the sport of baseball. Good morning, Bill. Oh, he's not even there. Okay. All right.
Well, we can talk a little bit more about D. Gordon and how he absolutely puked.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at some stats during the break.
Yeah.
And the dude hit 184 in August. Yeah, June, July, August, yes. Like 184. And I mean, I'm going to just preface this by saying my career pales in comparison to D. Gordon, and just about anybody, for that matter, that has made it to the big leagues. I barely was there. But I don't even know what it would be like to hit 184 and then continue to do the same thing. I mean, to me, I had times where there was a slump, where I went 0 for 15, and I changed something. I would, if, 'cause I was an aggressive hitter. So if I was swinging early and putting balls in play weekly, and not getting base hits, then I would start to work the count. I would start to take some pitches. All of a sudden, next thing you know, now I'm in my second or third AB, and I've seen 10 pitches from this guy. I have more information, which is basically arming me with more skills to do some damage in that third AB. Versus when I'm hitting well, I might only see 4 pitches through 2 ABs. But I got a knock. I hit 2 balls hard, and one might have left the yard. Now I don't care if I've seen a bunch of pitches. I'm locked in. At some point in time, I don't get it. Ichiro was a guy that swung a lot early too, right? And didn't walk very much.
Right.
But where did he hit the ball all the time? The 6th hole. Yeah. So he used his speed. Hit it to the left side. If it's 2-3 steps from the shortstop or third baseman, base hit. How can you be a fast guy and think, I'm going to just swing early and get the head out, buggy whip that thing to second, where if I actually hit it on the barrel and hit it somewhat hard, I'm out. How many hits did he get that he got jammed or hit off the end of the bat, and it's a dribbler to second base that got a base hit? Is that what you're going for? If so, then take a broomstick up there. That would be my next idea.
Maybe I'm reading into it too much because I've been on the bash D. Gordon train for quite a few months now.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, there's this look of, I can't believe he caught that ball I hit into the outfield. Like, how do you keep getting surprised by the fact that they're playing you 200 feet away from home plate?
Yeah.
You're not going to bloop one in. So that's been taken away from you because you're no threat to hit it over their heads. They are daring you to hit it over their heads, and you can't do it, obviously, or you'd be doing it. Okay? So, I mean, there are so many things. And I get that he's an infectious personality and that people that cover him like him. And he's had a terrific career. He won a batting title, for goodness sake. But if you're going to take the approach of I don't ever walk and people are going to have to live with it, then you had better hit.
Yeah,
you had better find hole after hole. Like Ichiro, you want to have the approach. I don't know, walk's not a big part of my game. But I hit 350.
Yeah. Nobody's going to say anything.
If you're D. Gordon, I think I said it earlier in the year, your limit is 290. Once you get under 290, then you need to change your approach at the plate. And he's down to 268 now, Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
268 for a guy that has walked. Brace yourself for this, people. Go ahead and hold on to your seats. 8 times in 500.
Oh, my goodness.
And 88 at-bats.
You have to try.
8!
You have to try to do that. I mean, you literally have to be like, I'm not walking.
It's the second worst walk ratio in the history of the sport. And if that's Ichiro, because he hit, I banged out 250 hits for you, Skip, You're welcome.
Yeah.
I put more pressure on the defense by putting the ball in play. And even, and he was criticized even for not walking. He should have walked more. But you can get away with it if you're rapping out 240 hits.
Mm-hmm.
D. Gordon had 46 hits in his first 136 at-bats this year. So that's when he reached his ultimate 340. I'm hitting 340 on May 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, he had 46 hits and 136 at-bats. And he's not walking. I think he'd walked once to that point in the year. Who cares, right?
Mm-hmm.
Putting pressure on the defense. You keep doing that, fine. It's sort of like, you know, remember White Chocolate, Jason Williams?
Yep.
You can keep playing that way, you know, between your legs and behind the back. And
no look, this and that.
And as long as your assist-to-turnover ratio is 7-1,
yep,
you play fine that way as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment that the turnovers start passing the assists, I need you to rein it back in. You got to have a plan B for how you're going to lead this team, how you're going to be a catalyst for this team. And Gordon's last 136 at-bats, 27 hits, two walks, and has stolen only 5 bases. Five! He's not even bringing that. That's his only skill.
Well, if you can't steal first, it's hard to steal second if you can't find a way onto first. I mean, I like we said when we were talking about it last hour, I liked what the way he played early. I mean, it, not just because of the outcomes, because he was getting a bunch of knocks. I liked it because he was the it was an infectious exuberance, the way that he'd high-five. Whether that's fake or that's real or
I think
liked,
it's real.
Whether it's liked in the clubhouse or it's annoying to some guys, whatever it is, I liked it. I like having a character like that on the team. It's just, to me, and I would say this if I was playing. I mean, I would have to have some years in the big leagues before I'd be able to talk to a veteran like that. But I would be like, bro, you got to figure out a way to start battling. You know what I mean? Stop rolling over balls and battle through some ABs because he was a large reason, a big reason why they started off so hot early. And he's a big reason. He's not the only reason. Seager sucked and didn't make his money.
Right.
He's a payroll bandit, too. But he is a big reason why the offense fell off. I mean, it was kind of designed around him. He was a guy that you had to play every day. And if it wasn't even tough ABs is the part that sucks about it. I mean, if you were just getting out and your average dips, but you were hitting balls with a plan that gives you the best chance of being successful, I don't care about the outcome. I care about the approach, and his approach was just bad. It was really not good.
And even when, okay, so you drop from first to ninth, you have two ways to you can approach that. Like, one, say, okay, I do not like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a leadoff hitter. I got to show them I can get on base. So right. You change things up.
Yeah.
Instead, he got far worse. And he got far sloppier.
Mm-hmm.
And his first pitch choices to swing at or take. I mean, he's swinging on first pitch no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're now not playing second base regularly, you're not even a defensive asset.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sort of stuck with this guy for the next couple of years, and I don't care how much rah-rah pom-pom he does on the sidelines. There's no way that that's worth $13 million per season.
Well, this year most certainly wasn't. I mean, a portion of it was month and a half, like you said. He was for sure making he was earning his paycheck. But since then, no. I wouldn't say that there's no chance that he comes back and has a good year, but he's got to make some sort of adjustment. If he's not going to walk, then get inside the ball and hit it to the other side of the field. You can't do both. You can't swing early and get the head out like you're some power guy. I don't care if you hit one home run and pimped it like Griffey. You are the furthest thing from Ken Griffey Jr. You're way closer to an Ichiro. You got speed. Use your speed. Your speed's never supposed to slump. I will commend him on one thing. He broke his toe and played through it. That can't be easy.
Yeah.
That doesn't affect your approach at the plate. I've had plenty of times where I had a leg injury, sprained ankle, whatever. My knee was jacked up for years that I played with. When I stepped into the box, I knew I wasn't going to be as fast as I once was, which wasn't very fast. But But it didn't affect my approach at the plate. You go up there and you have to have an approach that is going to give you the best opportunity of being successful. And he doesn't, for some reason, he doesn't get it. And I mean, I'm not going to blame anything on Ichiro, but I would just think that Ichiro would be like, hey, dude, we're pretty similar. Left-handed, speed yeah. guys, don't like to walk. You know what you should do? Hit it to the six hole because you can beat those out.
Yeah.
And maybe, like I said, there was a ton of hits that he got that were just because he didn't hit the ball hard enough. They were jam shots or often in the bat, little dribblers in the infield. That's a knock for him. If you don't want to bunt too, then like I said,
he's not even very good at bunting. If I had that kind of speed, how do you not excel at that craft? How do you not work at that craft?
I have no idea. I mean, that's something that just baffles me beyond belief. I mean, if I wouldn't even have to have speed. If they shifted on me, if I was a lefty, I'm Kyle Seager. Oh, I'd bunt. And you go, oh, they're not paying me to bunt. Mother flower, they're paying you to get hits. Get on base.
Jerry DePoto was recently quoted as saying, when teams pull apart, when they no longer band together, and they don't fight through adversity, I'm not telling you anything you're not watching. You're seeing it every day, and we're accountable for that. End quote. So okay. There was a recognition of this team as well. Remember all the times that we patted them on the back for how well they seemed, how much fun they seemed to be having,
oh, yeah.
and what a great team atmosphere, and don't underestimate that. Good, healthy clubhouse, and blah, 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 blah. Well, apparently at some point during the season, the team started pulling apart, and the team was no longer banding together. And there was a rumor that was floated out that Scott Servais had lost the locker room, and we thought, or the clubhouse, and we thought that report was crazy. Because we're watching the team that's 25 games over 500.
Mm-hmm.
11 and a half games up in the wild card race.
Right.
Well, where is this coming from? Anybody heard about this? But John Heyman reported that Scott Servais had lost the clubhouse. Now it looks like that's might have been the case. And apparently, as soon as they started struggling just a little bit, that then some personalities kind of showed their true colors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was part of an interview with Jerry in which he was asked about Nelson Cruz. And he's like, Nelson Cruz is the kind of guy that you want to have in your clubhouse.
For sure.
Okay? And then went on to make that quote. So there's this feeling that the Mariners roster might be riddled with players like this. And that this is a mess that, you know, you might have to make a lot of adjustments in the offseason if you even can make adjustments in the offseason.
Yeah, well, it's possible that you have a cancer or cancers. I personally don't think necessarily that this is a manager lost the clubhouse situation quite as much as it could have been, because I've been in these situations before, and a manager there's nothing a manager can do about it. Where you have two guys that for some reason, maybe everybody's all getting along at first, and then something happens, little tiff, little argument on the bus, on the plane, whatever. And next thing you know, you're like, you know, I don't like that dude. I don't like him. And he's like, I don't like him. If those two guys are strong personalities and they both feel like they're going to continue to have a D-measuring contest for the entire season and figure out who is more alpha than the other, that can become a problem, because then you'll have guys that feel like they have to take sides. Or even if they don't have to take sides, if this is my tightest boy on the team, and this one over here, I don't really care for him either. So we talk trash about him when we go out to dinner, and him and his buddies are talking trash about me and us. Next thing you know, it becomes infectious, right? Like,
yeah.
It could start with two guys. Well, then if you and I are boys and we go out to dinner, next thing you know, one guy didn't like you, and then he hears that we're talking about it. Now all of a sudden he's not liking me. Next thing you know, there's a division in the clubhouse. So to me, that's not a manager is not going to come in. A manager is not going to come in and tell D. Gordon and I'm just going to throw Haniger, hey, you two, stop being mean to Segura.
Yeah.
He's hurting his feelings and it's causing division or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
you're not going to have that. And that's total, I'm totally making that name up. I have no idea for sure. If D. Gordon and Segura, that's what we heard, Haniger just threw in there. So, I don't know. To me, I don't think it's a lost the clubhouse thing quite as much as I think that there was a division. There was some sort of measuring contest going on for the season.
The only thing I didn't notice that we worked mother flower and D measuring into the
same, I did catch that, right? Yes.
Nice, did you almost hit the drop button, dump button?
No.
On the mother flower?
No.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, I'd like to talk more about that in a moment, but right now we got to make room for fact or fiction.
It's time for fact.
Just a fact, Jack. That's a fact, Jack.
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
It is a fact.
Here's the way fact or fiction works. We're basically going to pick a football game against the spread, straight up, total points. There are some rules, but it's not so strict that we can't take some liberties. Once we make our selection, you will have 12 minutes to text fact if you agree with that pick, or fiction if you disagree with that pick. You must pick only one option per text window, and you can understand why. Now, each week, anyone who texted in a correct answer at any point during the week will be eligible to win a $1,000 weekly prize from Emerald Queen Casino. And those that accumulate the most correct responses during the course of the 13-week schedule will win $10,000 at the end of the year. All thanks to Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest. Now, our record has picked up as of late.
Yeah.
Yes, I still have not really contributed mightily, but at least I deputized the right people to get my turn in the rotation on the scoreboard.
Right.
And so I know that we've picked it up from that standpoint, because now every three trips, we get one out of four right. Okay? Bucky's picked it up. I know you've gotten at least one right. In this process, Slick. So
we are 4-7.
4-7.
Yeah.
Which is a lot better than 0-5, which is the way we started.
Right.
So that's four out of our last seven. You know what? We're running. We got a heater going on here.
Yeah,
people.
You're darn right we do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Slick, you are up.
Yes.
What do we got?
All right. I am looking at...
four of the last six. Four
the
last
Cleveland
six.
Football Browns.
Oh.
They play tonight in the Thursday night tilt against the New York Jets.
Oh, boy.
A Browns team, which I say has improved. I think they're going to get their first win. Yeah. The point spread, though, is 3.
You decided just to punt one, huh?
I think.
You decided to have fun just to lose on.
You know what? There are a lot of factors that go into this. First of all, it's Thursday night football. Home team usually wins. Cleveland's at home. Second of all, they're playing against a rookie quarterback, Sam Darnold. Just trying to settle into that New York offense. Third of all, I actually really, really like this Browns defense. So good Browns defense, rookie quarterback, home, Thursday night. I'm taking Cleveland -3 against the Jets on Thursday night football.
Oh. You know, I don't really disagree with the entire pitch, but there's just one overriding factor.
That Cleveland wins?
It's the Cleveland Browns.
The Cleveland Browns have not won since Christmas Eve of 2016. Have not won a football game, and they're actually giving points.
Yeah, I don't know how you give points.
Because of all the factors I just told you about, I guess. I don't know.
Now, I heard this morning from Chris Sims, and I don't rarely agree with anything Chris Sims says on my drive-in. But he did say, I think that if you notice that how much easier it is, Thursday night football is hard to play for every team that plays it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what time of the season. Particularly hard to have to go on the road for it.
Yes.
And he goes, I think you'll find that he said, I'm going to probably pick the home team to win every Thursday game, no matter the matchup, this entire season.
We'll
based
see.
On that information. So they are the home team.
Yes.
A team that hasn't won in, 19 months, a football game, is giving points tonight. And Slickhawk said, yep, that's the team for me.
Yep.
All right.
Another winner streak.
Yeah. All right, well, text the word fact if you agree with Slickhawk's insanity. Fiction if you disagree with it. You got 12 minutes to do so, and you will be eligible with a correct answer to win that $1,000 cash prize at the end of the week. Your next chance to play Fact or Fiction comes at 11:50 a.m. this morning with Jason Puckett and Cliff Averill. All right, coming up next, there's a situation going on in the National Football League that is kind of reminding everyone of a situation that just recently happened here in Seattle with our football team. Are there similarities? What are the differences? We discuss that next.
Now back to Chuck and Buck on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, coming up in 13 minutes, it'll be our 12-man roundtable. We do it every Thursday at 8 o'clock. So Greg Bell and Hugh Millen and Curtis Crabtree will be in studio with us, and we're going to pour over all the Seahawks topics. And, man, there are some juicy ones today. So can't wait to bring those guys in for a discussion. But, boy, Bucky, you get those hens talking. And they'll talk and talk and talk.
Talky talk talk.
Yeah, just gab and gab and gab. Those girls, boy, when they sit down in a circle, boy, oh boy, can't get them to stop
talking.
Gossip
is flying.
Insiders do be talking.
Yeah. I can pretty much take most of Mondays off and the entire 8 o'clock hour on Thursday.
So I don't know if we're going to be able to squeeze this little portion into the discussion today with those three big hitters in the industry. The titans of the industry.
Right.
So I wanted to bring up the mess that is the Pittsburgh Steelers right now and Mike Tomlin as Antonio Brown has been punished. We have been assured, yes, he's been punished. He's not going to miss any games.
No.
But he has been punished, and I don't think he's been fined at all. I think Mike Tomlin, probably in typical Mike Tomlin fashion, is like he got a stern talking to.
Yeah, and a finger wag.
Yeah, a finger wag and probably got a icy glaze.
Now, AB. Think maybe he had to carry some football pads.
We don't need
something.
Any of that.
No, I don't think. He wouldn't do that. That's too strict. That'd embarrass him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's right now, Antonio Brown's embarrassed that he's not getting the ball thrown to him enough. And he leads the National Football League in targets.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
He only has like 33, though, in two games. So, I mean, it's really, he's only getting like 17.
Right.
That's not a lot.
Yeah. So let's say that you hit 50 home runs in a season, and people, you're like, I'm angry that you didn't throw me enough curveballs because I wanted to hit 75, and I was sitting on the curve all year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and I would probably air out my manager for hitting me fourth instead of third because I would have got seven more at bats.
Yeah, exactly.
On the season.
Okay, that's probably even better.
Well, both of them.
So just look, pissed. And I get it. I mean, you've got a great player, and you got to put up with some nonsense. They have been putting up with nonsense forever. I just think Mike Tomlin has reached the point with the Pittsburgh Steelers that there is zero fear of him. Now, with us, I look at Mike Tomlin and I'm like, he scares me. Well, mm-hmm. I think that's the impression a lot of people get because it's this matter of fact, deliberate. Like he doesn't blink. He looks you right in the eye, and he's got this cadence about him, this presence about him. But the Steelers have been around him long enough that they're like, you're not going to do anything. I mean, I could come up and slap you in the face in public, and I'm playing Sunday, and you know it.
Mm.
And by the way, he did get figuratively slapped in public. That day a couple of years ago where he's chewing out his players and telling them that we now have a lot more focus, and Antonio Brown is videotaping himself dancing at his locker while his head coach is chewing him out
and putting it
out on blast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not only am I not paying attention to anything you're saying,
I'm going to show everybody.
I'm showing everybody that I'm not paying attention to anything you're saying.
That's bootleg. You know, I think that there is, on almost every aspect of coaching, it's going to run its life course, and they almost always wear out if you have the same guys. The one guy that would come to mind would be Belichick, where it just continues to work and work and work. But he treats everybody kind of like a little puppy. That you're going to kennel, you're going to scold him, you're going to be like, hey, no, you don't do that. Like, he never really cuts anybody any slack. I suppose Tom Brady probably gets more than some, but, I mean, even he complains that he doesn't feel like he's getting as much preferential treatment as he would like or thinks he deserves.
I think
Tom Brady's eaten a lot as the best player maybe to ever play the sport and to never really. I mean, I think that's been the frustration here recently. Like, how long do I have to be made an example of?
But I think that's exactly why his coaching philosophy doesn't age. It doesn't wear out over time. If you're pom-pom Pete and rah-rah-rah, be yourself, guys, and then you continuously give the same speeches, we heard it from some of these players that got shipped out this last year. They just started tuning those things out. Some of them are reading books, apparently. We hear that they don't like hearing those same things. If you're Tommy Tough Guy and you're going to be intimidating, well, eventually guys realize you're all talk.
Well, I think that
Belichick's not all talk.
Yeah, I think that's the comparison, because people are kind of comparing the Pittsburgh situation, that he's lost the locker room, to what the Seahawks went through last year and having to clean things out and getting rid of a bunch of players who will forever be, you know, linked to this era of Seahawk football. And maybe it was necessary, but you understood the message. The things that Cliff and Richard and Michael Bennett, they were saying, was like, we don't believe you anymore. We don't believe your message anymore, because you're not consistent with it. You know, so Mike Tomlin tries to do the intimidation thing, but everybody in Pittsburgh's figured him out. Like, we don't believe you. You're not intimidating.
Right.
We can walk all over you. Like, attitudinally, we can walk all over you.
Right.
Now, it'd be hard to be a head coach and sit there and not play a player like Antonio Brown in any given week, because he's just that good. But that being said, there is something about a culture and a locker room. And the thing that you need to be, even if you are a player's coach, is you got to be consistent with your message. You have to consistently, they've got to believe in the message.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're inconsistent with it, if you're sitting there like, we're not going to tolerate this, then don't tolerate it.
Right.
But you have said, we're not going to tolerate this behavior, so much to Antonio Brown in public and probably in private as well. He clearly doesn't worry about the threat of you doing anything to him.
Right. Well, I think winning kind of masks some of this stuff. Like,
oh, sure.
I think it's one of those things. If you end up saying, I'm going to punish Antonio Brown for being insubordinate or just for being a little bit of a punk, how many guys are going to be pissed off if you lose that game because you were trying to make a point, especially if it's a personal point? If he breaks team rules, you kind of should do it. And if he does something that is insulting to you, you punish him for that, like, you don't make me look stupid like that again, you're sitting the bench, we lose the game. How many dudes now are going to be pissed in that clubhouse or that locker room?
Coming up next, it's our 12-man roundtable with Greg, Hugh, and Curtis Crabtree.